Daily Mail is the most popular newspaper in Britain, with a readership of around 2 million people. Launched in 1896, the tabloid has a controversial history, celebrating Oswald Mosley's black shirts in the 1930s and opposing the UK taking refugees from Nazi Germany. But the paper has now moved on from overtly fascist ideology, as well as its early opposition to women and lower class men having the vote. These days, the Daily Mail is more obsessed with property prices, pseudoscience, celebrity cellulite, and whatever it is the royal family does all day. But there is a stranger side to this newspaper, one so divorced from reality that in 2017, Wikipedia banned it as a source due to unreliability. Today, many condemn the negative effects of social media, but no legacy outlet has been more influential in shaping the antiquated mindset and reactionary values of older Britons than the Mail. The average age of those who buy a physical copy is around 60, and the vast majority of its readership votes come election time. This means the Mail still sets the British political agenda, even as its readership makes up less than 3% of the population. Younger listeners, or those from outside Britain, may not understand quite how surreal the paper's ideology really is. In an effort to rectify this, comedy writers Al Devi and Drew Lavelle will take you through some of the more oddball or obscure stories from recent editions, attempting to unpack its strange worldview, helped and overseen by writer Ian Kalmado and with special guests from the London comedy writing scene. This is Mail Bonding. Disclaimer: this podcast contains fruity language as well as mature and immature themes. Caution should be exercised if listening in the company of younger children, angry pensioners, or the easily offended.
First up, let's have a story about scones.
The first story we're going to look at is about the National Trust secretly making all its scones vegan. So earlier this week, it was reported that the National Trust had decided not to use dairy products in their scones because obviously that was exclusive to vegans. And with its typical approach, the Daily Mail has decided that this is some kind of wokery and ruin the scones and has found some people to discuss that. Now, what I like about this story is that it mentions within it there's criticism from a campaign group, Restore Trust, that wants to stop the National Trust from, you know, admitting some of its objects might have been stolen from other countries or being woke at all. And they say they're against divisive ideologies and activism, and they call it virtue signalling, which I don't know how that works if the headline is National Trust secretly makes all its scones vegan. They accuse the Trust, which has 280 cafes, of failing to protect a piece of British heritage, i.e. the butter in the scones. Customers, in specifically, also said the plant-based scones taste like dry biscuits. Long-time member Maud Newby, 64, of Bury St Edmunds, said, "I can't stand the taste of the new scones. They're not like the traditional ones at all. They are flatter, drier, and have an unappealing texture." Now, far be it from me to suggest that Maud wouldn't have noticed if she hadn't been told, but yeah, I mean, This is very much...
Haven't they actually been doing this for quite a few years now? Isn't that part of the story? There's nothing really secret about it. It's just what they've been doing for years. And it's only now that wokery has risen its ugly head that people are noticing the scones don't taste the same.
Yes. Yeah, and of course, by wokery, what the Daily Mail means is, you know, previously disenfranchised and marginalised people are now allowed have their voices heard or be thought of, including in this instance vegans. So in the past, what probably would have happened is that a vegan would have gone to a National Trust property, queued up for a scone, asked the person serving whether there was butter or margarine in. They said they wouldn't know, they'd have to check with the chef, they'd disappear. Meanwhile, there'd be a long queue of people behind them, like Maud, getting more and more angry. Well, with this, they don't have to ask. Everyone can enjoy them except people who have in their heads that the National Trust
Did anyone tell Maud that she's quite free to put on full fat animal murdering butter on the scone?
Yes, yeah.
Very thick layers if she wants.
She can bring her own butter.
She can bring her own butter. Yeah. She can bring her own scones.
To be honest with you, I don't think Maud Newbury is a real person. It sounds like a made up name. Maud. I don't know.
This is going to be probably a recurring theme on this podcast is, you know, how can we be sure, even when someone is named, that this is actually someone that exists and not just an overworked Daily Mail sub-editor being told to put in an ideology with something that doesn't make sense. I mean,
Do you think they have a folder of likely names?
I think they do. I think we'll find some more later when we come to straight to the point because, you know, you get a first name of someone in their 60s and then a surname of someone in their 80s and just put them together randomly and then assign a quote to them, it seems to me. But, you know, this story is quite a short story because obviously there's not a lot to say.
But can I just say that there is a bit here where it says, Sir Bill Cash MP, who often has tea and scones in the House of Commons, said, "It makes me wonder what will happen next."
Tell us, Bill.
Will they stop selling Madeira cake because of historical events in Madeira?
Yeah.
Does anyone know what those historical events in Madeira are?
Only Sir Bill Cash. No.
Yeah.
But I would imagine at some point in Madeira there was something that the wokes didn't like. You know, I'm not a history expert, but and so that's what. But it's nice that he's an expert because he also sometimes has scones. They qualified that. You know, I mean, I've had a scone, but they didn't ask me.
You're an amateur scone eater.
I am, and I don't have them in the House of Commons very often. But
National Trust is crumbling. There you go.
Well, those are, you know, there's a sort of line, you know, after the BBC and various other, you know, institutions they find too woke, the National Trust seems to be in their sight lines because, obviously, Daily Mail readers like to wander around National Trust properties, but what they don't want to be reminded of is...
The slave money that built them.
No, or the fact that any of the objects in it may belong to other countries and so forth. Yeah, and you know, what they've done, you might be familiar with this as well, Ian, is they've gradually sort of started to admit that certain elements of it are in the lineage of colonialism.
Yeah, they're trying to update their labelling and things, yeah.
In a very small way, and, yeah, for people who...
But, in fact, what's happening, as far as I understand it, is that the trustee board of the National Trust comes up for election every now and then, and this group of people are trying to oust the people on the board at the moment to install the, what did you call their organisation?
Restore Trust.
Restore Trust. So they want Restore Trust members on the board of the National Trust so that they can have proper scones.
Yeah.
Yes, they're squeezing out all the butter they can squeeze out of everything.
I wonder if Restore Trust have, you know, butter farms. That would be a scandal the Daily Mail didn't...
I think they'll probably just roll around in butter.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know. Yeah, fuck you, vegans. I'm going to roll around in this butter if I want. And actually, you know, the vegans don't care. They would happily not have a scone if it had butter in it. They just need to be told. You know, it's not... There's no threat to it.
Well, you say that. I've seen some very angry vegans in my time.
Just massing against... But no, I hope Restore Trust sound like that. Yeah, they want to install a board of people who are essentially their localised versions of Jacob Rees-Mogg and Liz Truss and people like that. And
the people who should be running the National Trust.
Stop the wokes and
Jacob Rees-Mogg looks like he's made from butter anyway.
He does a little bit, yeah.
Melting on the benches.
So we'd better give the Trust people a right of reply. Our scones are made with vegetable-based spread, and as you mentioned, Ian, they seem to have been for a long time before this flared up into a culture wars story. This means our iconic plain and fruit scones can be enjoyed by those with dairy allergies and vegans, which, as I say, yes, prevents Maud from being stuck in a queue for a long time. But, I mean, they're not helping themselves there by calling their scones iconic. Iconic plain scones. It doesn't really work. You've only yourself to blame if you put your scones up on a pedestal and then people... You know,
yeah, exactly. It's never used. Pick them apart, iconic, isn't it?
I think they would be iconic if they were shaped in National Trust kind of buildings, and maybe there's a bit of architecture.
I think you're onto something there.
Yeah. That would be much more. maybe we need to look into how someone gets to be on the board of the National Trust, because if we can put up Drew as a a potential.
Well, I love butter for a start, so I should.
And you're English, aren't you?
Yes, that's it. I think that's the two questions to get in, isn't it?
Yeah.
Are you English? Do you like butter?
Yeah.
You're in. Yeah.
There you go.
Are you happy to wander around National Trust buildings? Well, who isn't? You know, they're very nice.
Do you write into points of view?
I'd quite like to move into a National Trust building.
Well, absolutely. Maybe there's a sort of, you know, in-house, like a school caretaker, you can stay in the National Trust building as long as you sort of keep the wokes out.
Yeah. And that's a woke bouncer.
Yeah.
For the National You're there Trust with like a spear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saying, do you like butter or
yes.
not? Do you think slavery is something we should talk about?
Is that tote bag made of hemp?
Yeah. And so on. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I've not tried their former scones or their current scones, but the allegation that they may taste different to the traditional version. As you say, you can add butter to them. Why Sir Bill Cash wants to get involved with his obscure historical allusions, I'm not sure. But, yeah.
If I were that upset about them, what I'd do is actually dip them in lard.
Yes. Just bring your own lard.
Well, the vegans.
Yes. Yeah.
But, yeah, we go. I mean, yeah, the National Trust is key to the Daily Mail's ideology, the UK. More than 24 million people visited the National Trust's 500 historic houses, castles, gardens, parks and nature reserves. Now, it's going to be very difficult to filter them by wokes and not wokes, isn't it? 24 million people. And then some MPs, well, I think we've named a few of those, have demanded the charity status be reconsidered after it published a tendentious report, tendentious, good word for the Daily Mail, linking 93 of its properties to slavery and colonialism. We need to embrace a wider range of viewpoints which may leave some feeling uncomfortable. Well, it seems like that went down quite badly, but what's worse is changing the recipe in their scones. So that's the end of that. But a nice picture of a scone with the caption, clot thickens. So good.
No way.
Well done.
Actually,
well
that's
done.
Quite good.
Yeah, well done.
Next up, fridge magnets.
We have a story, fridge magnets can give you a holiday boost by reminding you of happy times abroad, research finds. Let me just read this subheading to you, because I don't know whether the AI is failing again. Because it says, Britain said they preferred buying collecting magnets than photos.
Yeah, okay.
That's just, you know, I mean, we sort of get the gist, but it's just the wrong words.
More's been at the sherry again.
I assume they're on, you know, yeah, interns doing this for no money, but still. So anyway, they've interviewed some Britons who preferred collecting magnets from their holidays rather than taking photos, presumably because of the state of them and their families. So taking photos of themselves would just be depressing. So what they've got instead are fridge magnets that when they look at them on the fridge, remind them that they went on holiday and makes them happier, which apparently is science.
I don't know what maniac is sitting at home staring at their fridge. And, I mean, like it's like saying, hey, do you want to go for a pint tonight? And your friend says, you know what, I think I'm actually going to stay in and just stare at my fridge and think of all the happy memories of holidays that I've had.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing for me because my fridge door is not magnetic, so you can't do that. So I'm reduced to taking pictures of myself and my family.
Take your fridge back to the shop.
Yeah.
Oh, that's old-fashioned.
Many said they were reminded of their holidays every time they opened the fridge door, particularly when a magnet fell off, which presumably is a happy and joyous moment, because rather than being annoyed that it's a crap, tatty magnet they've bought somewhere, they pick it up, look at it, and go, oh, I went to Butlin's.
But that was nice. They carry some punch, these fridge magnets, because I like this quote here. One participant said, I don't tend to take a picture of anything. I'll just get a fridge magnet at the end, and I can remember it all from that.
Jesus Christ.
And I like that quote as well, because it says one participant. They couldn't even be bothered to make up a name for this person who doesn't exist.
Mr. Josh Magnet from Croydon. But it depends where you've been. You know, mentioning Croydon again, I don't think you can buy a Croydon fridge magnet.
No.
Why not?
Yeah, why can't you get that?
Purchases were found to be a repeated behaviour, with one woman recalling a massive panic after realising she hadn't bought one on her way home.
A massive panic.
Because, you know, if we unpack that, because obviously it's going to be very difficult to get a fridge magnet from Tenerife shipped to you, isn't it? Virtually impossible. You have to travel back there. But also, surely, rather than trying to get a fridge magnet from your holiday destination shipped to you, you should consider cognitive behavioural therapy if you're having a massive panic after not having one. I might forget I went on holiday without the fridge magnet.
I mean, it sounds like she's got a metal plate in her head anyway. She probably just stick it to her head.
Well, talking of that, I mean, it does sound a bit sinister because it says here that some magnets had become attached to more poignant memories. Oh, I mean, how does that happen?
Goodness. Goodness me.
My poignant memory of picking fridge magnets off the floor every time I try and get some milk. I mean, again, good luck to you if you do exist and you prefer fridge magnets to photos. I mean, too many people constantly take selfies and so forth. But yeah, if you're having a mental issue with not having fridge magnets from everywhere you've been, then maybe it's time to seek some help.
Well, I've never been to Starigrad, where the illustration shows fridge magnets from, and it's in Croatia. And I must say, I've got quite a good impression of Starigrad from this fridge magnet. It's got lots of nice red roof buildings and a church and a big ship, and it's a lovely place.
I think, yeah, I heart Croatia. Pictures of Starigrad, picturesque, the weather's lovely. Yeah, maybe.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah.
Maybe we want to reverse that and start going to places on the basis of what their fridge magnets offer. Look them up, get a range of fridge magnets and say, hello, love, where would you like to go this year? Luton looks nice, but there's also...
but the fridge magnets are terrible, so let's go...
The fridge magnet is just someone being invaded by chicken shops. it's just depressing.
Just putting it out there, my hometown of Croydon, what would the fridge magnet look like?
The demolished Whitgift Centre.
Yes.
Yeah, I think.
That's a good one, yeah.
Or
yeah.
A tram.
Yeah, a tram.
That would be good.
The flyover. There's quite a lot of parks, I've heard, in Croydon.
There are. I mean,
They found human remains there the other day in one of them, didn't they?
Isn't there an office for immigrants to go and get sort of verified, like and it's called something like the Aliens Office or something, and it's based in East Croydon.
Yeah.
So we could have a queue of desperate
people. A queue of people, yeah, that would make a good
fish. Seeking desperate people.
Seeking asylum.
The other thing you could have is the Croydon facelift.
I think that's kind of unfair, really, because, you know, lots of people are in lots of places that were slightly less than salubrious were having that hairstyle. I don't know. I mean, maybe it originated in Croydon, maybe they needed something to be proud of, but yeah, I personally feel like, you know, you have a national phenomena that is being...
It's good to locate it, though, somewhere, isn't it? And
well, if people want to visit, you know, and just say, where's the facelift museum? Where can I get a fridge magnet?
Where can I get a facelift? The last paragraph in this one is quite interesting as well, because it seems very limiting, or a lack of imagination or something. Fridge magnets are unusual among souvenirs in being intended for a single and specific destination within the home, the fridge.
Yeah.
Are you sure you can't put them anywhere else?
Well, as I say, that limits me, because, you know, my fridge door's not magnetic, so unless I sort of sellotape them up there, which seems to defeat the purpose, you know. I'm not sure Blu-Tack would be strong enough. Yeah. I'm lost as to how to remember my experiences without a door that is magnetic.
But that's a good point. I mean, you should be able to put them anywhere, right? That's metal. Where else could you put a fridge magnet? Unless it's illegal.
Radiators.
Yeah. Microwave. Any metal appliance.
Yes.
Any, if you've got a metal chair somewhere in your house.
That plate in your head, if you've got one.
Yeah. But I would imagine the woman who had the panic attack at not buying a fridge magnet has a house that is sort of full of fridge magnets on every...
It's just a metal house.
She's basically built a metal building and she's got fridge magnets all over it.
Well, she's got 10 fridges.
Yeah, or she might have 10 fridges, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually concerned that there's probably been an antiques roadshow where someone has a collection of over 10,000 fridge magnets.
Yeah.
Most of which they've never visited the place they've got the fridge magnets to. Do you think people are entitled to have fridge magnets to places they've never been?
No, that should be made illegal. But I also think if you've got so many fridge magnets that you can't fit any more on your fridge, then does that mean you stop travelling? Because there's no point.
Well, I think you'd have to. And also, like, if you've got fridge magnets for places you've never been, they're just going to generate false memories, aren't they? And that's dangerous. you know, remember that time we went to that place in Croatia? We'd never been there. Well, I've got a fridge magnet, so
memories.
Who to believe?
Right, now let's get straight to the point.
Okay, so we're going to be reading a few extracts from Straight to the Point, which is a side column on the Mail's letter page where Daily Mail readers write in something that is on their minds that generally is only one sentence. So it's very similar to, you may have heard from The Simpsons, Old Man Shouts at Cloud, or from in the previous Chris Morris show, Speak Your Brains, or indeed Viz's Top Tips. But the difference here is that this all relates to the Mail's strange parallel world, and it's nominally all real people who have taken the time and effort to write in and say this. And some of them are interesting, some of them are surreal, some of them are topical, and all of them are slightly strange to anyone coming to this cold. Certainly when I started reading it, I wondered what on earth was happening. But now I think, well, it's a great segment for this podcast. So the one I'm going to read first is by a Mr. Ian Hutton of Dartmouth in Devon, key mail reading area there. Lovely Dartmouth. And he says, I can't imagine Mrs. Thatcher would ever have been cowed into working from home. Now, this shows two key strands of the Daily Mail for me. It's the sort of Thatcherite longing for that kind of 80s ideology, and also the complete divorce from reality. Because famously, the Prime Minister moves into 10 Downing Street so that they can essentially work from home. That's where they work. They work on the parliamentary estate in the Palace of Westminster. That is, they have a house there. So Ian's point, really, it seems, is that young people nowadays are allowed to work from home because
technology has moved forward.
Commuting is depressing and time-consuming.
Yeah.
Offices or workplaces can be soul-deadening if you work from home.
And it's ecologically not the best thing.
Best thing to drive your car to the office or wherever.
Yeah.
But obviously, Ian and the Daily Mail are very much of the opinion that anyone who works from home would presumably benefit from the bringing back of national service and just isn't strong-willed enough. So he's invoked Mrs. Thatcher in a kind of ill-thought-out scenario where she would never have worked from home, even though her home was arguably her workplace.
I think she would have worked from home. I think she would have built like a House of Commons in her living room.
Yes.
Yes.
Sort of the green benches and things.
Yeah.
And, you know, worked around her husband and just set up. Yeah, she'd have done what she wanted. I mean, that's what she did. So she wouldn't have. Whatever you think about the departed Lady Thatcher, Ian Hutton from Dartmouth in Devon, she would probably not have obeyed your ideas about working from home or not working from home because she went her own way. But it's nice to cling to the fantasy anyway. Right, we'll move on to Drew's selection now from Straight to the Point.
Yeah, this one is a banger. I absolutely love this one. Mark Saunders from Lake Isle of Wight has said, where do high street coffee shops get all their wobbly tables from? Very good point, Mark Saunders. Or maybe there is a wobbly table IKEA, specifically set up for coffee shops that you can buy a wobbly table from.
Yeah, it's probably actually a normal table. They just leave out a couple of the Allen keys.
Yeah.
So you can't put it up properly.
Yeah. I'm assuming Mark Saunders is being rhetorical and clever there rather than actually demanding an answer. And if I were to write in and provide him with an answer saying, Drew has found a wobbly table manufacturer, he wouldn't appreciate it, you know.
Yeah, dear Mark Saunders, we have got an array of wobbly tables.
How many do you need?
From. Yeah.
They're about $4,000 each.
If you want that extra wobble, it's a bit more money, yeah. $6,000.
Do people get a right of reply to these?
I don't think so. Again, it's just, you know.
Because I would like to say to Mark that I think I see the hand of a conspiracy here. It's the coffee shops drumming up their sales because you spill all your coffee, you have to go and get another one.
That's fantastic.
So it's deliberate.
That's true. That is a good conspiracy. So Mark Saunders, where's he off?
Isle of Wight.
Mark Saunders of the Isle of Wight, again, another great Daily Mail reading stronghold. I think, Mark, what you've misinterpreted here is that often the ground outside coffee shops is not level. So it's not a wobbly table. It's a normal table, for example, on a cobblestone or on an uneven surface. I think that's your problem there.
Yeah, or maybe you've just got your head to a slant.
Yes, yeah. Or maybe, you know, you're gripping the table and you've got the shakes.
Too much coffee,
exactly. We were talking about this earlier.
So the Isle of Wight is known for minor tremors as well. Yeah, so geologically speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, yeah, check the weather, check with your doctor. It may be that the table isn't wobbly.
Check your seismograph.
Yeah,
maybe your leg's wobbly.
I mean, everyone should check their seismograph occasionally.
I did this morning.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a fantastic one.
Okay. Next up on Straight to the Point.
Okay, well, I rather like this. It's a very, very fair question. If China is shipping bamboo for eco-friendly toilet rolls, how are the pandas going to fare? Now, Babs Nickel from Grimsby, I get that that's a very interesting point, and it's something I'm sure a lot of people have thought about. The only thing is, I'm not sure whether you're talking about the pandas' toilet roll needs or their dietary needs, or maybe both.
Yeah.
I mean, they are linked, after all.
And what I would say to you, Babs, and I have a lot of... I'm complete 100% faith that you exist in Grimsby, is that there aren't... I mean, the pandas are doing quite well in China. There's a lot of breeding programs, but they're not that prolific. There's not a million pandas. I mean, I think there might be enough bamboo for everyone. I'm not sure... I mean, I personally haven't heard about bamboo for eco-friendly toilet rolls. It sounds... unnecessary. Babs.
Sounds a bit splintery.
It does.
And sounds a bit painful, yeah.
But Babs is clearly on top of this story and knows more about it than I am, and has worried about the pandas. Now, I mean, while it shows a deep knowledge of Chinese culture, bamboo, pandas, and a love of animals, which I'm sure we all share, I think the pandas will probably have some bamboo left, unless eco-friendly toilet rolls are going to take up 100% of the bamboo in China. In which case, yes, we need to start some kind of educational campaign.
Well, it's like so many of these things, isn't it? That it claims that it's ecologically for the best, but actually when you scratch the surface, you find that it's actually a disaster for the environment, because all of that bamboo that's going to be hoovered up by Western toilet roll makers is going to lead to an environmental disaster in China.
It may very well do. And so... Babs, in conclusion, I would say pursue this further. Write to your MP. Don't write on the toilet roll, though. Yeah, no.
That's the Chinese.
Well, I mean, normal toilet roll. Support normal toilet roll, not bamboo.
My advice, I wonder what Babs is using then. If Babs doesn't want to use this toilet roll, then are they just wiping their arse on anything?
I think Babs, and I'm going to assume...
Daily Mail, maybe.
I'm going to assume that Babs is a lady here, but that may be unfair, although obviously...
I would say she was a lady.
The Daily Mail... don't want to get into this area because it makes them very angry, but she seems to be very much at the cutting edge of toilet roll technology.
Yes.
More so than... So perhaps there's an opportunity to research more, to write to her MP, to report back and just find out more, because with the best will in the world, her worries are not going to be answered by sending one sentence into the Daily Mail to be printed, which no one will answer or indeed look into.
Well, Babs, if you're listening, just use your hands or give it a good shake and you'll be saving the pandas.
You will be. They'll be very happy about that, I suspect.
Now, time for some chickens.
We live in the fattest town in Britain. We've been invaded by 36 chicken shops. They've made us into a laughing stock. Now, what I like about that headline is the word invaded.
Yes.
By 36 chicken shops, ...
They've been coming over here on their small boats.
Yes.
Clucking. And the chicken shops I don't know where they land, but then they somehow get themselves...
Well, they get into Luton Airport, don't they?
Well, yeah.
But the word I like in that headline is stock. Because it's all about chickens.
Ah.
Oh, laughing stock, yes.
But that's just my simple...
Whether that was meant to
10
be.
10 years of journalism school, and yeah. But yeah, they said residents living in Britain's most obese area say they have been invaded by chicken shops and are urging council bosses to ban any others from opening or spreading their wings as such.
It doesn't say that in there.
No. The Bedfordshire town of Luton has 19 peri-peri chicken shops alone, and dozens of others.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why they're picking up on the fact that it's peri-peri chicken shops. I was asking you guys earlier, is peri-peri a brand? It's not, it's just the flavouring.
Mm. Yeah. So, a lot of chicken shops will cook the standard KFC knockoff of the, whatever it is, breadcrumby. And they'll also do you want it painted in this... different flavours.
But the lie in the story there is, you see, that peri-peri, if you have that, it's much more healthy than the Kentucky Fried Chicken ones, because they grill them. They're not deep-fried like the Kentucky Fried things.
Well, Luton councillors should know this.
That you'd have thought.
Yeah, yeah. It says here, another shocking stat shows 2/3 of adults in Luton are classed as overweight or obese. One furious local, no name mentioned, told Mail Online, "The town is full of the town is full of obese people. It's the council's fault. They have let it get out of control. No others should be opening anytime soon."
Well, I think they do name him, because believe it, maybe it's the same guy or not, but Mr. Ferron, again, we don't know if that's a real name, he runs a convenience store, which presumably only sells salad or whatever, but not cigarettes and booze. But he runs a convenience store and says, "A lot of people are fat and lazy here." That would be your customers. "And that attitude is enabled by the amount of chicken shops and fast food places." I mean, not wanting to get too philosophical on this, but it's very, is it causation or correlation, you know?
Yeah,
chicken and egg, really.
Chicken and egg, indeed.
Oh, God.
Is the chicken causing the obesity, or do the obese people flock to Luton for the chicken?
Very good.
But, yeah, so there's a guy, he says, "Oh, the trend of fast food outlets is appalling. The plumber said, we're a laughing stock." Well, you're partly a laughing stock because you're allowing yourself to be interviewed by the Daily Mail for an article that claims that it should be the council stopping people from eating chicken, which the Mail's fairly libertarian. There could very easily be another story saying appalled Lutonians are not allowed to eat at chicken shops because the council deems them too many. But what the angle here is that it's disgusting there's so many, with an underlying, yes, possibly fat-shaming, possibly even racial element, as there often is, at the Daily Mail, saying we're being invaded by these fast food outlets that are not run by white people. And it's an invasion. Fast food places are followed by betting shops again, on the boats or on the planes, slot machines and just rubbish places, which, it's a bit subjective, isn't it? You know, yeah. Your place is rubbish.
What if they'd been invaded by cream tea shops with vegan scones?
Well, I think that would be... I'm not sure what the level of market is for that in Luton. You know, I mean, I've been to Luton Airport. I quite liked the car park, but obviously that burned down, didn't it, recently, sadly. But
that's right.
Yeah.
What was he doing in Luton Airport car park?
Well, exactly.
It wasn't anywhere near a Screwfix, was it?
Anyway, yeah, so what I find interesting about what you just said, Al, was that you said the plumber, which makes it sound like there's only one plumber in Luton.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's a cartoon town, yeah. You know. Peri Peri Chicken. Yeah, obviously they are, I think they're obviously saying Peri Peri because they're hinting at the fact that obviously white people don't like spice.
It's a foreign, all that foreign muck, all the yes. Foreigners. But this is Luton, this is not Tunbridge Wells. Normally the Mail don't care what happens in Luton, you know, they're not going to report on murders or crime there. What yeah. They are going to report on is a clickbait story, which has worked, obviously, because we've clicked on it, to blame chicken shops for a health crisis. And yeah, there's, if you scroll down, there's a guy who says, I'll find the quote, but he says something like, "Other than a brothel, anything would be better."
I like that one.
which obviously he's put a lot of thought into this. And but yeah, the other thing I want to mention about this is that you could very easily recast this as thriving local businesses do well for themselves in deprived town. I mean, if you right down the bottom, you have someone who works in a chicken shop saying, "We're packed to the rafters. It's great. We love it. It's amazing. It's great for business. People have free choice on what they eat, and we provide that." And that is logical. You know, the idea that the Mail want a nanny state to stop people from eating chicken so that they're in theory less fat, when in actuality they probably have a whole raft of genetic or, you know, addictive issues or impoverished or whatever. It's not just we'll shut a chicken shop and suddenly two-thirds of people in Luton won't be obese.
I think the Mail's problem with Luton is that it's a pleasingly diverse town. It's got some very interesting communities in Luton.
Yes.
You know, a very strong Caribbean community. Isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
It does feel a lot like this is being presented to the Mail readers who, you know, would never dream of going to London or might go to a show in town, but they're not going to go to an area of London that is, vibrant or interesting like, Lowland or Peckham or, where we are now and like it. They might hear people speaking other languages, eating interesting food or...
I mean, it's crazy to think that if they do shut all of these Peri Peri chicken shops down, that all of a sudden the obese people of Luton are going to look around and start to think, you know what, I'm going to get skinny.
Yeah, I'm not going to eat anything else that's bad. Yeah. There is no other bad food, there's just chicken.
Yeah.
Husband and wife John and Margaret returned to shop in Luton for the first time in several years. Margaret, 72, said, "It's been a few years since we've been here. It's changed a lot and not for the better." I don't think there's any 72-year-old lady visiting a new place who would think that a place has changed for the better. You know, that's not how the mindset works, really. Someone else says, some are filthy and disgusting as well. Now, how do they know that unless they've been into the kitchen? They're not a hygiene inspector.
Well, the thing is, it's the words as well. I mean, it's like, not only are they horrible chicken shops, they're also filthy and disgusting. Yeah. It's like, so just being a chicken shop is bad enough.
But
actually, I think there's a bit of an advantage to it. If I was knocking around looting of a Friday night, I'd go on a chicken shop crawl.
Well, I've actually shown this stories to some people who do frequent chicken shops in their area, and they've basically said it's my kind of town. I'm not sure they're looking to move there. Maybe if it's invaded a bit further, they would. But, I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, you could also turn this story around. Not only is it successful local fast food businesses doing well and raking in the money, but it's also the most choice and the most options, and chicken fans everywhere should travel there for a... Yeah,
Have a festival every year of the chicken, fried chicken industry.
A poultry crawl.
A poultry crawl with floats and, you know, free sampling of chickens and music, chicken music.
I like that.
Yeah, I think this should be, the funky chicken, do the dance. I personally can't imagine that even the people I know who frequent chicken shops would be able to do a crawl of all 36 and eat something from everywhere. But,
Jarvis Cocker at the festival.
Yeah, I also like this quote here that says, one worker at a Peri Peri chicken said, we all think it's quite funny. A lot of us are friends. Luton is the golden square of chicken shops. We provide a good service and give people what they want. So yeah, golden square. But I like that they all think it's quite funny.
Mm. And I like the idea that Golden Square is a nicely breadcrumbed portion of chicken that you could eat with some chips.
Golden Square.
Go to the Golden Square.
We'll have a bucket of Golden Squares, please.
To get some Golden Squares.
Do they have a Luton Monopoly board just full of chicken shops?
They should.
That might be something you want to copyright later on.
Perhaps the government could have, you know, helped other businesses and made sure that they were profitable through the pandemic and afterwards.
True enough.
In order that they didn't have to reopen as... betting shops or pound shops or charity shops or chicken shops. It's all very well to complain about the makeup of the high street when, you know, you have actively endorsed the government under whom it's sort of fallen apart for the last 14 years. So
I wonder what the actual nutrition is. They haven't got any nutritionists speaking in this, have they?
No.
They've just got
angry confectioners and Margaret, who's visiting Luton for the first time in 20 years and is appalled that it's now not like the 70s.
Did they interview any chickens?
Well, I mean...
No chickens were harmed.
What have the chickens said about this?
I think you'd have to go through the gangmasters, wouldn't you? Yeah. The ones who are...
Their beaks are sealed.
Right. Now let's get straight to the point.
S.N. Bauer, Shoreham by Sea of West Sussex, says, if Banksy came anywhere near my home, I'd have him prosecuted for criminal damage. Now, there's a little bit of unpacking to do here, but obviously S.N. Bauer is assuming that Banksy wants to do some art. He might come somewhere near your home if he happened to be in Shoreham by Sea, perhaps on a visit to the coast.
He might be a leaf blower.
Yeah. It's very difficult to have someone prosecuted for criminal damage who hasn't done anything, I think. I'm no legal expert. But also, you know, famously, S.N. Bauer of Shoreham-by-Sea, West Sussex, no one knows what Banksy looks like. So any man in a hoodie with a Bristolian accent comes anywhere near your house, you're going to try and have them prosecuted for criminal damage, which is not going to put you in the favour of the local police, I wouldn't have thought. You know, however onside they are. Maybe they've heard from you a few times before, S.N. Bauer. You thought you saw Banksy. You thought he was going to deface your garage, and actually it wasn't Banksy and the person did nothing. So while it's nice to know your stance on Banksy and criminal damage, I don't think you've thought this one through. And certainly I would suggest you don't dial 999.
Well, secondly, I wonder what the police's response would be if you said, I think Banksy is... you know, hanging about outside my house. What would the police say?
Loitering with intent.
With intent. On that note,
if I was Banksy and going to Shoreham and found out Mr. whatever his name's place is, I would actually do a mural of someone committing criminal damage.
Yes.
It's a nice little matter of touch. And of course, we don't know that you're not Banksy, Ian. There's no way of knowing.
Well, there is that.
I don't know that my mum isn't Banksy.
No. I don't know that I'm not Banksy myself.
Because you've just been sleepwalking.
Yes.
I woke up at 4 a.m. in a brothel. With no clothes on. Convinced I was Banksy. And then I went to Shoreham by Sea and got arrested. So that's how the story... But I mean, yeah, your mum lives in the right part of the country to be Banksy. She's down in the West Country.
I've never seen her and Banksy together. She's never denied it.
No. Well, so maybe you should get that on record, just in case, because obviously you don't want SM Bauer putting your mother in prison for criminal damage.
Don't I?
or maybe you'd like to go on holiday with her to Shoreham by Sea.
Yes.
And kid her out as Banksy. I'm not sure what he wears. And just test SM Bauer.
Yeah.
So nice. a lot of possibilities there, but I would say...
Would you like Banksy to put a memorial on your wall?
Well, I mean, up the road from me in Finsbury Park, one appeared not long ago.
Was that the one with the tree, the green?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. And you know, very quickly someone defaced it as if to say... Yeah, fuck you, Banksy, I can make a mess as well. It was very different to SM Bauer wanting to put them in prison for criminal damage. In North London, someone wanted to raise the stakes and do more criminal damage. Because obviously, if it's Banksy doing it, then yes, I suppose technically that's criminal damage. But then you've got another level of you're destroying a valuable artwork now, aren't you?
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. But if Banksy's anything to go by, because he had that one shredded at the auction, do you remember that?
He did.
Yeah, and so it could well have been Banksy that went along a couple of days later and threw the white paint over the one in Finsbury Park.
Well, there was another...
It could be a double Banksy.
What's known as a double Banksy, yeah. Well, there was also that one recently as well, wasn't there, in another part of London? I don't think it was Croydon, but it was somewhere else in London, that within a few hours, a man came and stole it.
Stole it, yeah.
And he was on CCTV and didn't hide his... People watched him do it.
People
filmed
his
identity, yeah. And funnily enough, he did get arrested because he wasn't a professional criminal, turns out. He just saw a Banksy and thought, yeah.
Like, but he could have said that was his form of art. He's an artist.
He's
a can of worms there. Yes, what is art?
Basically, I'm a situationist. I take Banksy's work and put it in different contexts in order to create new meaning.
Yeah.
Meaning 2 or 3 million quid if I sell it. But and Banksy may be on board with that. We don't know, but certainly
it could have been Banksy who removed it. But there you go. Yeah.
Next, straight to the point.
Yes, this is a very valid point, and I think gets to the heart of some of the social problems we have now. Bill Davies of Biggin Hill, he says, maybe the reason children are being sent to school in nappies, apparently as reported in the Mail, is because the parents are still wearing theirs. Well, that's a very good point, Bill.
Yeah.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Parents, adults in generations are basically just big children.
Yes.
With their phones and their beards and their tattoos. They really need to be bringing up their children with a much more strict hand. There is an answer to this, Bill, and I'm sure you know it, and the answer is national service. the quicker that comes around, the better.
Yeah, and whether that's for the adults or the children in their nappies, I don't know.
Yes.
I mean, for any international listeners, Biggin Hill is a town in southeast London famous for its airport. But also, like, I assume this will relate back to a story about adults sending their children to school in nappies. But the fact is that, having a child of a similar age myself, when a child is first goes to school or nursery, when they're 3 or just over 4, they're not necessarily properly toilet trained. So the alternative to not sending him in nappies is just having the teacher tidy up the mess every day and throw the underwear away, which is not necessarily any better. And I do think that regardless of how you solve this problem as a parent, whether you're a younger or an older parent, putting yourself in a nappy doesn't solve the teacher's problem, which is that...
Well, it does on parents' evening.
Yeah.
That's sure on parents'
That's
evening.
True.
It could be useful to have a nappy on.
So, but yeah, I mean, I do like the underlying message in this that young people shouldn't be breeding anyone who is not from my generation or demographic is not good at parenting, and a child, even if they're 3, going to school in a nappy is something I can shout about to fix.
And discipline should be applied good and hard from a very early age.
Yes,
to parents and their children. So that's the worldview, really.
I should imagine he's of the age where he'll be wearing a nappy soon anyway.
Yes, you could well be right.
Okay, yes, I've got a good straight to the point here. This is from Steve Edwards, Bishop's Stortford, who says, I belong to two clubs, and belong, he's putting in capital letters. I don't know why. I belong to two clubs, one mixed gender, one all male. Archery is for everyone, but it's difficult to get women interested in building model railways. And
I really like the twist at the end there, first off.
Yeah, I bet it is difficult. I wonder how hard Steve Edwards has tried, though. But yeah, I mean, what point is he trying to make, do you think?
I think he's trying to make the point that some clubs have to be all male because they concern interests that are only male.
Yes.
And I presume he's implying that model railway making is a male pursuit. But he could get around the problem, because if women are interested in archery, then he could invite them to the model railway club to take pot shots at the trains.
There's a big, obviously there's an ongoing thread in the Mail at the moment of being, you know, hostile to trans rights and dehumanising trans people and just, you know. What was this gentleman's name?
Steve Edwards,
that sounds like a real name, not made up to me. Mm. Seems to have come at it from an angle that, well, doesn't make any sense, you know. And I think it's nice. Steve doesn't bring with him any of that vitriol and hatred towards a sort of very marginalised community that you often get in the Mail. But what he doesn't do is make any kind of coherent point, really.
No. I think what he's doing is equating archery and model railway clubs with the Garrick.
Yes.
Quite possibly. And, of course, you know, model railway clubs are self-selecting. You know, there no women go there because it's a male interest, whereas the Garrick, obviously, famously, hasn't allowed women to darken its halls forever, but now. The suggestion is...
That's because of the giant model railway set that's on the first floor of the Garrick.
Oh, I'm not familiar with it, not being part of the establishment myself. I think...
You get lawyers and... Yeah, journalists.
That's
MPs.
What they do, though. They all go in there and play with their model railways. And give each other jobs and establishment roles and things.
I like the way that Steve has said, archery is for everyone.
Yes.
But...
It's not for everyone. It's not for people who don't like archery.
No, it's not. I have to say, Steve, I'd like to contradict you there. It's not for me.
I think it's
not for me.
What point he's trying to make, I think, is saying archery is for everyone, but model railways are just for men. I think that's what he's trying to say.
Which, again, is if anyone really cared, either in this room or generally, about model railways, that might be quite a reactionary approach. But actually, I don't think people, anyone who is not in a model railway club, women, man, woman or otherwise, is clamouring at the door to be let in. You know, it's a niche interest, Steve, and, you know, it's very difficult for me to understand what point you're making, but I disagree with it.
Maybe if there's any ladies listening who are into model railways or belong to a female model railway club, Please get in touch.
Yeah, get in touch at the usual way. We'll perhaps you could guest on an upcoming episode and we can develop this more, because from Steve's one sentence, there's a whole world of issues to try.
I'm actually interested to know if Steve's model railway club actively turns women away.
Literally, or
has a little room where they say you can't come into the club proper, but there's a little room there with just a couple of trains in it. You can sit in there and wait for your husband.
We've got a doll's house out here. Yes. But
do you think all the women, all the wives and stuff, if they are married or whatnot, do you think they have a separate room then, whilst all the men play with the railways?
They buy Tupperware in there and things like that.
Vibrators.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I've heard.
I don't think Steve needs to worry too much about women wanting to get into his model railway club. I think that's a mistaken concern.
I think you're safe, Steve.
Time for the brothel.
The headline goes, Tory MP who found himself naked in brothel at 4 a.m, unable to find his clothes, feared he was victim of foreign honey trap. And it amazes me that that was his first thought. He stood there naked at 4 a.m. in this brothel, not knowing how he got there, and his first thought was, I am the victim of a foreign honey trap.
Yeah, well, not a good old British honey trap then.
No.
Which would have been probably all right, I guess.
What made him think it was a foreign honey trap straight away, do you think?
I imagine it's the fact his...
Was it the maracas?
It might have been. Or it might have just have been his inherent xenophobia. I mean,
yes.
I think it's possible that the Daily Mail, who are not naming anyone or providing much in the way of, you know, evidence for a lot of this story, just added that detail. Obviously, that's one way of looking at it. If you were the victim of a foreign honey trap, there would be a level of... There would be a motive for it, so... One suggested motive he gave was that Russia or China might want to, they're the enemies of this country, so they might want to target an MP in that way.
Well, they're the people providing wobbly tables, I believe, Russia and China, aren't they?
Quite possibly, and that's destroying the infrastructure of the country, according to our friend Mark Saunders. But in response to his story, his idea of what may have happened, and it goes without saying this is a Conservative MP, but last night senior party figures expressed scepticism about the honey trap theory, with one saying, I can't think of a single useful thing he could tell the Russians or the Chinese. Which, yeah, there's literally no reason for that at all.
But I like this second paragraph here that says, the Tory MP who rang a Conservative Party manager begging to be extracted from a brothel feared he was the victim of a foreign sting operation. I mean, could he not find the exit? Why did he need to be chaperoned out?
Well, that's the thing. And also...
Oh, he was blind.
He was also naked.
That really
narrows it down.
Well, it does narrow it down to no Conservative MPs, as far as I'm aware. No. But also, he's in a situation, he wakes up, he doesn't know where his clothes are, he doesn't know what's happened.
We've all been there.
But he knows that he's in a brothel. And I wonder what... Obviously, you know, a cynic might say, well, actually, you've got messed up, you've gone to a brothel, and then you've woken up hungover or whatever. And
but you'd have to be very cynical to
panic.
Think that.
You would have to be very cynical to think that. But obviously, you know, his first thoughts are, where are my clothes? Second thoughts are, I'm the victim of a Chinese-Russian honey trap. Third thought is, I don't know what's happened, I can't remember the evening that led me here.
Yeah.
It's now 4 a.m, what have I been doing for the last 8 hours? But I can identify the room I'm in as a brothel immediately. And you have that skill.
His fourth thought was, why are there so many peri-peri chicken shops in Luton?
Yes.
Yes. But I think he probably identified it as a brothel because of you've seen the picture of it. It's just basically bathed in a lurid red light and there's some women's legs everywhere. So
I believe that's a woman wearing heels. Well, yeah, I believe that's a Daily Mail stock image of...
it's not an actual image.
Of the Daily Mail's brothel.
the idealised brothel with a little inset picture of the Houses of Parliament with sunshine blaring off them in a heavenly way, which is interesting.
I don't know if you've followed the link to the sort of more expanded story, but what I like about this is the impression of a lot of giggling public school Tory MPs having a right laugh about this. The expanded one tells about the person that the guy phoned saying, oh, 4 a.m. must be bad news. And it was apparently at the back end of Boris Johnson's administration. And then it said, it set the rumour mill turning at the Commons, with MPs drawing up shortlists of the most likely candidates. So they're running a sweepstake on it.
Yeah, a brothel pool.
One MP said, it's got us all asking, who would be your phone a friend at 4 a.m. in a sticky situation? Mm. And our conclusion was, certainly not the person that he did call. So there's a mystery bubbling up.
The Conservative Party manager, who he did call at 4 a.m, which may not be the first type of call that Conservative Party manager.
You wouldn't call any manager. Sure.
No.
Yes. You call my boss at work.
Call your boss.
I'm naked in a brothel. I'm handcuffed to a bed. Can you help me?
Can you bring me some clothes?
And have I still got my job?
Yeah. But yeah, it's all very well them having a laugh and a pool, but like he's identified and it leads to a by-election and they lose, then, which it tends to be what happens nowadays with these scandals, then they're not laughing quite so much there. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't for a moment, you know, argue with his,
well, basically non-existent timeline, I wouldn't suggest for a moment that he'd spend 6 or 7 hours drinking, go back to a brothel, lose his clothes rather than have them stolen.
they just fell off.
Wake up and panic, phone his boss to help him. That, you know, not only does that story tie together quite badly, but it also suggests that, because, I mean, whatever the situation was, whether, as he alleges, someone slipped something in his drink or not, you do have to physically be led to a brothel, presumably by someone who works in that brothel. You know, there's no ambiguity around this, you know.
Probably somewhere in the back of your mind there has to be the thought, I'd quite like to go to a brothel now.
Yeah, I don't think you end up in a brothel. I mean, there have been awful stories about people whose drinks have been spiked and they've been exploited, but what has never happened in that instance is the person whose drink has been spiked is then carried into a brothel.
Well, you have the brothel carriers.
The brothel, yeah.
The old brothel carriers.
But are they like a big canvas bag?
But what I'm thinking is that
the brothel carriers just bring Tory MPs out above their heads.
Yeah, that's it.
A cattle falc or something. In the morning and take them back to the House of Commons to begin their work for their constituents.
But yeah, I like to think that once word got out that this person was in a brothel, I reckon that a lot of Conservatives opted to help him get out, and I reckon about 50 of them turned up to help him get out and stayed there for a good couple of hours trying to help him.
You have been listening to Male Bonding with Al Devi, Drew Lavelle and Ian Cowmeadow. Music and other noises by Drew Lavelle.